Hear your favorite NFL legends sharing their stories and insights every week right here on Thursday Night Tailgate with Chris Mascaro and Bob Lazzari. Take it away, guys.
All right, now back with us here on Thursday Night Tailgate is former Chargers defensive end Bert Grossman. Let me remind you about Bert's background. He's from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, played his college ball at the University of Pittsburgh. He was a first-round draft choice, the eighth selection overall by the San Diego Chargers in 1989. Played in the NFL from 89 to 94 for the Chargers and Eagles before a neck injury prematurely ended his playing career. Over the course of his career, he had 276 sacks, tackles, 43 and a half sacks, recorded three safeties, and forced three fumbles. After his playing days, he worked in Philadelphia on a radio show called Eagles Hour, which won an Emmy for Best Sports Reporter back in 1995. In 96, he published a book titled The Way Things Ought to Be. In 2011, he was selected as the NFL Teacher of the Year for the impact he had on students' educational and life skills development. He's become a wonderful friend of the show, and we're very honored he is back with us again tonight here on Thursday Night Tailgate. Hey, Bert, Chris, and Bob, thanks for coming back on the show.
Welcome back, Bert.
Great to be back. I thought I did something wrong. You haven't invited me back in so long.
Sorry, we'll do better next time, I promise.
All right.
So, Bert, you know, have you gotten used to referring to the Chargers as the Los Angeles Chargers yet? Is that set in for you and the people in San Diego?
Oh, God, no. The people, you know, it's crazy. The people in San Diego are just beyond bitter. I always, when I was growing up, I remember, you know, the Colts leaving in the middle of the night. I remember the Art Modell thing. It's similar to that. I didn't understand when I was younger how bitter people got and how they still carried it forever, but it's pretty hard here. They don't take kindly to anything that has to do with Chargers, Dean Spanos, really anything down here.
So to that end, right? I mean, last season was the first time in forever, right, that San Diego didn't have football in the town. What's the town like on Sundays now? I mean, are people, to your point about bitterness, are people following the Chargers? Have they latched on to somebody else? What's a Sunday afternoon like in San Diego?
You know, we have a weird demographic here. It's always been a split town between the Raiders and the Chargers to begin with. So even when the Chargers are playing, you always had a lot of Raider interest. So, you know, it's been quiet. It's been, and what I thought would happen when people would, you know, grasp onto San Diego State football a little more since they've been good the last few years, but they haven't even really picked up on San Diego State football. I think they're averaging like 21,000 a game, and being in the top 25 is crazy. But it's not as much coverage. You know, there's certain radio stations here that have the actual contract with the Chargers to broadcast, and people still boycott those stations and don't want to hear it. So it's been different. I mean, it's kind of split. Some stations do cover them to a bit, but nothing like it was before, no.
As a Charger alumni, are you still, you know, following the Chargers and what they're doing, or does it hurt even for you to see them get ripped out of San Diego and go to L.A.?
No, I don't, you know what, I don't follow them anymore. It's weird. You see people like, you know, LT and, Rivers or Gates or Dan Fouts or, you know, some of the great Chargers, you know, if say I was here today, which he's not, but, you know, those guys kind of, you know, pass the bar of they don't belong to the Chargers. They're not regional players or regional celebrities. They were almost so good they belong to the NFL now. So I kind of give them a pass because, you know, they were so great. They're Hall of Famers. They're really NFL property and property of the game now, not the Chargers. But, you know, as a player that was just a good player and a starter, and I make my home in San Diego, I became more loyal to the area, and I don't follow them at all or even talk well of them, to be honest with you.
Bob, questions for Bert?
Great to have you back, Bert. I want to go back before you even got to Pittsburgh and then talk about your early childhood, Bert. And a lot of the players we've had on here in the past mastered different sports, played different sports, and they gave that a lot of credit for where they got in the NFL. Tell us about your sports activities as a very young kid.
As a young kid, I played baseball, but, you know, I have two boys now. It's crazy. I can't get them out of the house of video games, so they don't do that anymore. But, you know, for me, I threw the shot put, too, and I actually had scholarship offers for track. So when I got – and I started throwing the shot put, like, young, probably when I was 12, believe it or not. So I became better at the shot put than I was at football for a time. So I almost didn't play football in college. I was going to go for track and just try to go to the Olympics and do that. So for me, I think I went on a couple college visits and I saw, you know, what happens in a major college town when there's college football and the girls and everything else. And then I saw what a shot putter has. And then I changed my mind.
And, you know, Bert, I've talked to Chris in the past. We've had a lot of players come on the show who had roots in Pennsylvania, and I really got a lecture, shall we say, in college football. When I was in graduate school in New Haven, they played a Division II schedule that included all those Division II schools out of Pennsylvania, you know, your Indiana, Pennsylvania, and your Slippery Rocks, and I can go on and on. There's so many great ones, and I obviously you're very familiar with that. You ended up going to Pitt, but put aside, put that myth aside, Bert, that all the great players end up at Pitt and Penn State. A lot of these kids are forced to go to the other ones just because it's a logjam, right?
It is, and especially back then. I mean, it's hard to tell people out here because they don't have the same setup out here with colleges. But like you said, I could probably go on for a half hour and still wouldn't name half the colleges in Pennsylvania that play football. Mm-hmm. And there's so many of them. And out here, they have junior colleges, and the smaller colleges don't have sports out here. So, I mean, you know, there's so many. I mean, I couldn't even name them. I mean, God, Andre Reed comes up. I mean, obviously, Kutztown. But we had kids get drafted from the Chargers, from Bloomsburg. I mean, there's just so much shipping. I mean, I could go on and on and on and on. And that's just around Philadelphia. That's not even getting into, you know, the Pittsburgh area, the Scranton area. I mean, there's so much that people don't realize how much football actually goes on in that state. And you're right. They just look at, you know, most kids either go to Temple, they go to Pitt, they go to Penn State, or they go to Notre Dame, you know, and that's just the way it always was back then for us. But they forget about Syracuse, and they forget about Boston College used to take a ton of kids out of there, and West Virginia. I mean, there's so much football and so much talent. And like you said, that's not even counting the 100 or 200 other smaller schools that are out there pulling kids in that are also getting tryouts and also, you know, making practice squads in the pros. It's amazing.
Bert, I want to get your thoughts on your alma mater, on Pitt. They fell out of national prominence, you know, really back in the mid-80s and really haven't figured it out since. Pat Narduzzi came in as the head coach, and the first couple of years went 8-5. Last season slipped to 5-7. What is Pitt missing? What does it need to do in order to get back to a top 20 program?
Oh, God, I wish I knew the you know, it's funny you say that because I remember coming out of high school and I was the, I think I was the number one defensive lineman in the country in high school coming out and could have went anywhere. And my senior year in high school, Pitt was, I think, number three preseason ranked. They lost like the first game to Oklahoma real bad. They ended up being 3-7. And Pitt had been like literally, I think like Clemson or Alabama. They'd won like 35-2 the previous 3 years. Everybody thought it was just a one time, you know, anomaly and it wasn't going to be a big thing. And literally, like you said, they have not been back since that year. I think it was 84, 85. And if you look at them from 80 or even 76 when Dorsett was there to that 85, they were just dominant and they just fell off the map and they've been off it for 25 years. It's just, it's really hard to fathom. I mean, you see Penn State has down years. And I think when I was at Pitt, we beat Penn State, you know, my last 2 years, but they always bounced back and they always went through these cycles. Same with Ohio State. We beat Ohio State 48-0 my senior year, but they always bounced back. You thought Pitt would do that, and it just never happened. And, you know, I don't know the answer. I think when they took the stadium out of the campus, I think that really hurt Pitt. They almost became like a Temple or University of Miami. Miami still has a talent down there that's unbelievable, so they don't have a problem. But, you know, kids go there, and they see 20,000 people there, and then you go to Ohio State or you go to Notre Dame, and then you want to be part of that experience. You want to be on TV every week. And when they took that, you know, the atmosphere of the on-campus stadium out of there and they put it in Heinz Field, it just wasn't a big college town atmosphere anymore. And I think that's what they missed. And that's part of it. But they still get these great players that come out of there, but they never seem to put it together. I mean, if I told you our D line that, and we were 5-6, we had myself, Tony Saragusa, Mark Spindler, Keith Hamilton, Sean Gilbert. I mean, they're all first rounders pretty much, or all, you know, Pro Bowl players, and we still were 5-6. So, and we had three first rounders on the offensive line. I mean, our issue was always we never had a quarterback. You know, we had Ironhead, you had Curtis Martin, you've had all these great running backs, but Pitt really hasn't had a quarterback since Dan Marino that you could say is an All-American, that you can say could win you a game and come back. They have had game managers, but I mean, it's almost inexcusable for 30 years to not have a dynamic quarterback at that school. And I think that's been it. I mean, you look at last year when they upset Miami, it was a freshman kid, Kenny Pickett. And just because he played semi, I mean, he played great as a freshman, but he played like a quarterback you'd think was good. You know, a guy that would actually get drafted. And that's what they're capable of doing if they have that guy. But they literally have not had that guy since Dan Marino. You know, they had John Kangemi afterwards, who was a good player and, you know, kept him in the Fiesta Bowl and kept him 8-3 or 9-2. But since those two guys, you really can't name anybody that's been a great quarterback or even going on to be a pro quarterback.
And Bert, last year they finally renewed the rivalry with Penn State. You talk about playing Penn State when you were there. They play each other again this season in week two on September 8th. It's going to be the 100th meeting between the two teams. But talk about what it was like when you were there when it was Pitt-Penn State week.
Oh God, that was incredible. You know, I remember my freshman year, I had to start that game and Penn State went on to win the national championship that year and it was in Penn State. And, you know, coming from high school, it's just something you can't prepare for. Like it was just such a jump in everything, atmosphere. And they killed us because, you know, they won the national championship that year. And then they killed the second year and then we beat them the next 2 years. But for us, it was always the game that was packed and you couldn't get into, and it was always on TV. And, you know, the last 2 years, they would always switch it at night like they are this year just for it to be a primetime game. You knew the whole nation was watching. You knew all the kids on the other team because you all were recruited together. And like you said, half of both rosters were from Pennsylvania. And, I mean, it was just a cool atmosphere. And it's really, you know, it's almost like Ohio State, Michigan, where everybody knows each other because you're so close. But it's one of those in-state rivalries where every kid knows who they are. Every kid on Penn State had come through Pitt on a recruiting trip that we probably hosted or showed, and vice versa. So you knew everybody, and it was just that kind of game. It was just great.
Bob, a couple more for Bert before we let him go.
Yeah, Bert, about the Spanos family, Alex in particular, this guy, again, a billionaire. Obviously, his name is synonymous with San Diego. It's kind of sad to bring it up now. But at this point, I mean, your relationship with him back in the day, did he treat the players pretty much well down the road?
You know what? He was different. I mean, the NFL was different then. There was no union then. There was no collective bargaining. There was no, you know, collective bargaining contract. I mean, literally people forget that didn't come around until 93, and Alex pretty much stepped down from running the program 94, 95 and let his son take over. But at the time, you know what I appreciate about him? I mean, I came from Philadelphia, went to Pittsburgh, so we're used to, you know, old school working people. He came up from nothing. The one thing he would always do, it wasn't any games or anything else. Whatever he meant, he would tell you. And if he liked you, he'd tell you. If he didn't like you, he'd tell you. If you sucked, he would tell you. If you're good, he would tell you. He was a businessman and he was, you know, stingy, but again, I mean, you got what you got. Whatever he was. So, I mean, I appreciated that. I liked him personally. You know, he reminded me of people I grew up with, just in that way. You know, it was a different time. I mean, he was one of those people, if I would ask for more money, he would, in a meeting, he would literally call me a Jew because my last name is Grossman. I mean, you can't do that now. But you would appreciate the time because it was a different time. I mean, that's how people talked, and that's how people talked where I was from. And to hear from an owner and a billionaire, I mean, you just appreciate it to a point that way. So as far as honest and you get what you see, I mean, there was nobody like him that way. But, you know, some people took it the wrong way. I liked him.
And finally, Bert, Chris had mentioned you were forced to retire early before the age of 30. It could be devastating in one way, but I think in your case, obviously, there might not have been too much of a choice. How did you deal with that, especially like a year or two after that?
You know, it was hard. I mean, especially with the neck injury, because you're especially at the time when it happened, you know, 94, 95. I mean, you know, I had just come off a routine like knee scope where I got staph infection and almost died. So I was, you know, fearful of every surgery at that point. But, you know, I mean, the neck's a funny thing. I mean, even in this day and age where the medical has gone so much farther than it was then, you don't want to mess with it. And if you're in your seventh year and you get neck surgery, no one's signing you anyway. So I actually tried to go back and play without getting the surgery, and I got signed and I failed the physical because I needed the surgery. So it was really this perfect storm of, you know, you can't play because you can't pass the physical if you don't get the surgery. But if you get the surgery as a seventh year defensive lineman, you're not going to get signed by anybody anyway after next surgery. But in the long run with CT and everything else, you know, it was probably a better thing for me. You know, now I'm grateful it was probably just that, but you know, you always look back and say, I wish this or I wish that, but at the time it was devastating, of course, but not anymore.
Bert, before we let you go, you're a guy who is certainly making a big positive impact in the local community. We love spotlighting players doing great things and giving back. Remind our listeners about what you're doing to help disadvantaged kids.
So I have a school that basically through a grant serves gang kids and dropout kids and teaches them a job skill, you know, vocational trainings pretty much out of the high schools. When we went, it was always you had wood shop or metal shop or all these other vocational avenues to go for kids. They don't really have them anymore, especially in California. So we have a school that does that. And then also have a nonprofit that services veterans and children in wheelchairs to give them sports. So we have sports leagues for them. We have a summer camp, a big summer camp, for a week that just has kids in wheelchairs from, 4 to 18. Same with Junior Seau Adaptive Sports Camp. So that's pretty cool. But just basically get to stay busy with that and my own kids. And then, you know, when football comes around, you have to do all the goofy media stuff, which in turn is good too, because it keeps the other stuff. They give you an opportunity like you are to, you know, talk about the positive stuff you're doing and get awareness for that.
Bert, let our listeners know, how can they stay up to date with the things that you're doing, whether it's online or it's over social media?
Oh, God, I don't do much social media. You guys give me more social media than anybody on the Bert_Grossman. But pretty much, you know, I'm more active on Twitter during football, but I'm really not off football except stupid jokes. So to be honest with you, when you guys push it, I get more followers than anything. So just keep doing that.
He'll do that.
We'll be glad to do it. Bert, thanks so much for taking time out of your night, your evening out there in San Diego to come back and be a part of the show. I promise we'll have you back sooner next time, my friend.
I hope so. Thank you, guys.
Good night, Bert.
All right. Take care, Bert. All the best to you and your family.
You too.
That is former Pitt and San Diego Chargers defensive end Bert Grossman. What a guy. Love that guy. We definitely got to have him back on sooner. My bad. That's on me.
Yeah, he's he was a great player, Chris, and we could talk a lot more. He actually ended in Philly there in 94, and obviously had allegiance to that city, too. So coast to coast, he was well-liked.
Yes, indeed. All right, we've got our next guest, Tony Collins, hanging on the line. We're going to get to Tony on the other side of this quick station break.